Brent from Birkenstock Concepts by Heel to Toe in downtown Urbana. For over 25 years, offering all sizes and widths of Birkenstocks, from clogs and sandals to work, dress, and sport shoes. Birkenstock Concepts offers repair and modification services and a certified podorthist and orthotist on staff. Today's programming is made possible in part by grants from 10,000 Villages in downtown Champaign and Crossroads Global Handcrafts, 428 North Main in Bloomington, offering ground and whole bean coffee purchased from farmers using internationally recognized fair trade standards.
This is the Afternoon Magazine on AM 580. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. Thanks for tuning in today. Today on the program, we're going to take an armchair stroll through the autumn garden and do a little daydreaming about next spring. Two guests join me in the studio. Diane Noland and Chuck Voigt are our guests this afternoon. They're happy to answer your questions about plants in the home landscape, herbs, vegetables, flowering plants, shrubs, trees. We look forward to your questions, comments, ideas. You can join the conversation with a telephone call. If you're in the Champaign-Urbana area, the number is 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Outside the local dialing area, if it would be a long-distance call, use our toll-free number, 800-222-9455. 800-222-WILL. Diane Noland teaches in the Department of Natural Resources and Environmental Sciences at the University of Illinois. She is the co-author with Kristen Bolin of Perennials for the Landscape. She's also the author of the textbook Floral Design and Interior Landscape Management. And she is the host of Illinois Gardener on our companion station, WILL-TV. The show airs live on Thursday evening at 7 and is repeated Saturday morning at 11 o'clock. Chuck Voigt is State Vegetable and Herb Extension Specialist in the Department of Natural Resources and Environmental Sciences. He is the co-author with J.S. Vandermark of Vegetable Gardening in the Midwest. And Chuck is also a regular guest here on the Afternoon Magazine during the growing season. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area, anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. Good to see you guys.
Hello, Celeste.
It's a beautiful fall day out there, isn't it?
It really is.
Yeah. Well, welcome back to the program. And we've got a listener all ready to go already. So let's talk with our first caller, who is in Champaign on line one. Hi.
Hi. Butterfly bush and Russian sage. How do you prepare those to winter over?
Ooh, that's a very good question. Both of those are sub-shrubs. In other words, they have woody stems to them. And I leave both of them all through the winter. It gives a little bit of winter character. They do hold up fine through the winter winds. And then come along March or April, I trim Russian sage to 4 to 6 inches high all the way down. And then butterfly bush, I wait to see, but oftentimes I'll cut that to 18 inches and let that burst back out. If you leave butterfly bush, it can sometimes get to 8 to 10 feet because in light years, everything will come back. And in hard winters, it'll die back to the roots. So it really depends on the winter. But those are sub-shrubs, and they can stay through the winter. If you don't like the, if there's something unsightly or a broken branch, you can trim, you know, anywhere that you need to. But I actually leave them, and they look sort of cloud-like. Mm-hmm. And it's a nice one. But those two do have the same kind of care.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
And next we talk with a listener on a cell phone on line two. Good afternoon.
Hi. I have a question, mostly because this is a good time for planting. I live out in St. Joe in one of those new subdivisions, so we have no topsoil. It's all clay. And the water doesn't drain well. And since the house behind us put in sod, we have water that stands and stands and stands along our back fence. And so I'm wondering what we can put along there.
Have you thought about making some swale areas as far as, you know, leaving some area to actually let the water drain, maybe along the outside edge, and let the soil be mounded up a little bit, that's going to be a problem. But you're going to need
a swale area. What do you mean?
A swale is where you actually do a little contouring of the land.
Uh-huh.
And it doesn't have to be a lot, but, you know, along the back side, you may just want to dig out a little bit and mound up in front of that so the water drains away from these flowers. Nothing likes to grow in standing water. Well-drained is the best way. Poorly drained equals dead.
Poorly drained is our whole yard, basically,
right.
Because it's all that clay.
So you really need to build up the soil. I would say haul in bags and bags of compost, work in. Chuck, jump in here.
I was going to suggest that you do look into the compost situation because when you get these construction soils where they strip off anything that's worth anything and then really don't put much of it back, the best way to rebuild that is to add as much organic matter as you can get your hands on. Till in all these leaves that people are sending off. If you can intercept those, grab those, chew them up, and work those into the soil. Go to the county composting facility. Get as much as they'll let you have, because organic matter is the only thing that's really gonna help what you're doing. And then what Diane said about changing the levels is certainly a good idea, because if it's uniformly wet, there's very few things that you can grow there other than swamp plants. And also, you don't want it standing anywhere near the house, because that gives you real problems. So you want
to... No, it doesn't dry, stand near the house. The house must be up a little because it drains down to the very foot of the backyard. But we have this patch that's, maybe a foot or so, where we've started having standing water.
Well, maybe dig that out and consider a water garden there and contour away from it so that things drain back toward that.
Yeah, I think make it a nice contour, give you a little bit of distinction in your yard. That wouldn't be so bad. And then you could put a bald cypress tree back there, because
we had put a river birch in.
That's good.
Because that's good.
That's a good choice.
I've kind of contemplated putting just more of those. See, we wanted to put in things that would grow tall to kind of ease the fence line, mm-hmm. and also provide some privacy because of the house right behind us.
Well, I think it'd be nice to have a combination of a couple kinds of trees, because if something would come in and wipe out the birches, then you could have a bald cypress and then also the birch. The river birch does require a lot of pruning, a lot of maintenance, limbing it up.
I've had river birch before. I love birches. So,
good.
Yeah, that was just a natural for me to get.
Right. But it likes that kind of moist site, so that was a very good choice.
Yeah, well, that was why we put it back there, because though we now have standing water, even when we first moved in, when it would rain, we had water standing there until it stopped raining, but then it would drain off and just be kind of soggy. But now we have, you know, standing water for days after it's rained.
So the compost is going to help elevate your area and make the soil better. You really don't want to sod until you have done something to it.
Well, that, unfortunately, the builder sodded.
Okay.
That was done on top of everything, and we've managed to take care of the sod fairly well. I mean, it's not, you know, the ideal situation, but that isn't bad. Yeah.
So those are our suggestions. Hopefully that'll work out.
I'll remember the bald cypress then.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Good luck.
I love your show, this and Illinois Gardener both.
Oh, great. Thanks.
Thanks for the call this afternoon. You know, this caller, Chuck, you mentioned leaves, that some of us, you know, we can incorporate some of those into the landscape, but I've got so many leaves, they have to go to the curb and get picked up here in November. But
not so fast, Celeste.
I know,
he's
and
got
I have
ideas.
I have a neighbor who thinks just like that too.
Chuck,
like, you're not going to.
Are you an organic gardener? Let's find out. I mean, ask the hard question here.
Well, I tend in that direction, yes.
Well, and the reason these two are chuckling here now is because, well, this is a great segue for Chuck to tell us about
a day-long conference on organic gardening.
Yeah, that's coming up Saturday the 20th. It's going to be here in Urbana at the Holiday Inn, exit 183 off of I-74. Really easy to get to, really easy to find. I've lined up five speakers on different aspects of organic gardening from all around the country. We're going to have a little exhibit and retail area. Anybody who's familiar with Herb Day, it's that same sort of a setup, except mm-hmm. with organic gardening as the theme instead of herbs. I think it's going to be a really fun day. We've got an organic theme lunch, and we have room. Unlike Herb Day, which always sells out,
right.
This is a new event, so we still have room. We will be able to accept walk-ins that day.
Okay.
Walk-ins won't get lunch is the only problem.
Okay. But now is there still time to make a telephone call
yes.
and register?
Yes, there is still time to call in 217-333-7738. That gets you to my secretary, Carol Preston, and we can probably accept things that trickle in after the weekend. So if you got things in the mail today,
okay.
it would be good. It's $49 a person. That includes lunch and the whole deal and you know, paying the expenses of the speakers and those kinds of things.
Okay. And we'll mention this one more time before we go this afternoon. So
okay.
if people are just hearing it now and they're thinking, I wish I had a pencil. We got some time here to get a pencil and a scrap of paper.
Well, now we should really talk about the leaves, though, which we got sidetracked from what Celeste does with her leaves. Go ahead, Chuck. Go for it.
Well, it's amazing if you shred or mulch with a mower, mm-hmm. how many leaves the soil will accept.
Mm-hmm.
I have a place in my yard where they blow and they get several inches deep, and that's a place where you have to deal with that, but If you run them through a shredder, then you can use them as mulch or you can use them as something else. They stay in place. They don't mat up. They don't blow away. And really, if you're willing to put in a little time in terms of changing how you mow so that you shred up the leaves or actually get a shredder and chop them up, it's hard to imagine a home property that couldn't recycle pretty much every leaf that falls back through their property,
yeah.
and it would be to the advantage because you're recycling the nutrients and building up the organic matter and all those good things.
Yes.
And I know that busy people, it's easier to bag them up and put them on the curb,
yeah.
but I drive down like Pennsylvania Avenue in Urbana and I see them sitting out there, 15, 20 bags of leaves, and I'm saying, oh my gosh, there's a gold mine there waiting for somebody to harvest that organic matter.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I have a neighbor who reminds me of this every year, but we don't do that many leaves, but we do make leaf mold and we do run
That's
the
good.
Mower over a large part of the property, but we do, you know, it gets to the point where it's like, you know, we have in some areas of the yard, you can be up to your shin, you know.
Good
you
know, choice, you Celeste.
We were waiting to see what we were up to.
Up to your sweet Bippy. Well, we've got a couple of callers waiting to talk with
and
us.
And she's,
so.
That's a fact. It can get very deep.
You can. Yeah. Okay. Let's talk with another listener, a caller in Martinsville, Clark County, line 4. Go ahead.
Diane, this is John Beatty.
Well, hi there.
Say hello to Dwayne for me the next time you see him.
I will.
we are needing some information on perennials, and in the intro they mentioned that you have authored a perennial book. Would you give me the title of it, please?
It is Perennials for the Landscape, and it's a very user-friendly and more for a novice gardener, and we go through the identification of it, you know, step-by-step, leaves, flowers, and how to grow it.
And, okay. And it's published by whom?
It is published by, it was Interstate Publishers, but now that is Pearson Prentice Hall. And it's
okay.
Nolan and Bolin, B-O-L-I-N.
B-O-L-I-N.
Yes, Nolan and Bolin. We yep. didn't mean to have it rhyme. It just worked out that way.
Yeah, well, I know your name, but I didn't know.
That's right.
And by the way, I agree with your co-host about we live in the country and I have a vacuum and I the name of our home is Maplewood, as Dwayne could tell you, so we've got lots of leaves and I shred them all.
That's great. I don't think I've ever raked a leaf at my house. I just let them go into the perennials, and it mulches through the winter.
And right.
then the wind blows them into the vegetable garden, and those break down. But I have the luxury of a windy rural area, not a city area.
We never remove the leaves from the flower beds until the spring.
I don't either. And sometimes they just go underneath the mulch if they're not too heavy, not too thick. Well, great. Hey. Thanks for your call.
Thank you.
Next, we go to Woodford County, a listener on line one. Hi.
Hi. Hi. Enjoying your show. I've got a windy rural question, too.
Okay. We're all over it.
My wife tries to have hanging plants on our porch, so they're in shade all day, and we have wind, and we have success with only one kind of plant, asparagus ferns.
Right.
Do you know of any other plants that would survive in that kind of condition?
Well, we can both name a few, but I think I've actually put my Christmas cactus in a hanging basket, and Christmas cactus has done really well for me. And I may not have as windy a site as you, but the asparagus fern, there's several kinds. There's the loose open one, and then there's the Meyeri type that is more of a tubular, linear-looking frond, and that's done really well for me out on my porch or deck. Another one I was thinking, I actually grow quite a few ferns, but I put them back on the face of the house, not out on the end of the porch. And what I do is I'll put half containers and actually put them on the house itself. And that gives a little bit of wind protection as well. I have ivies that I grow out there with the, and usually the ivies hold up pretty well.
What kind of ivy?
Just a regular English ivy, green and variegated. And those that I bring into the house and put them in a cool room, or some of them are in my office window right now, but I cut them way back for the winter to bring in. And then I use them in arrangements and other things, and then I bring them back out. But ivy holds up really well. Chuck, can you think of some?
Well, bird's nest sansevieria comes to mind as something that's really tough indoors and out, could stand the wind, could stand the shade. It's a lot shorter than the regular sansevieria, so would not be the long leaves wouldn't be interfering with the wire that's holding it up.
I've grown scented geraniums. Now, you'll get some sun, parts of the day. That's how I grow the Christmas cactus and the scented geraniums, because they get west sun in my case. So it's hot, dry, and windy on some of it. But I water every day, and that seems to be the key. Seems like you could grow. Go ahead.
Geraniums don't work for us because in front of our porch is a yard full of trees. So we shade all day long.
Okay. Well, then I think you need to look into the ivies and the grow peace lilies.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I've got one of those on my porch too, and they're tough.
Yeah. Generally, the tough house plants that you would maybe want to overwinter outside anyway. Usually, things that make good house plants are things that grew in the shade naturally. So that's not too bad a call.
And some of the smaller frond ferns, probably.
The wind would bother me with ferns.
Yeah, but I group mine, so you put the more wind, less tolerant to wind. I put them in groupings, and that could go in the back.
Hang a windbreak in front of the tender ones.
Well, I use like asparagus springeri as a windbreak, one of the other ones, so. And pots and, other things. So, well, that's a short list for you.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Thanks for the call. Let's talk with another listener, a caller in Spring Bay, line two. Hi.
Good afternoon. Well, I pulled up all of my green beans and lima beans to be able to put down a green manure crop. And then I got to thinking, by pulling them up, had I pulled out nitrogen? Should I have just mowed them off and left the roots in the ground?
That's what I normally do. What I normally do is leave them through the winter and mow them off in the spring. By then, they're so brittle that they just disintegrate when you mow over them, and then all those nodules that were on the roots are down in the soil releasing the nitrogen that they fixed. So, yes, it probably would have been better to leave them there, but depending on what you did with them after you get rid of them.
Okay, well, I threw them on my compost pile.
Well, that's a good place for them. That's what I was hoping you'd say.
Am I releasing that to the air now, or should I...
Well, I think as we go through the cool part of the season, depending on what the heat of your compost pile is, if it's hot, then the microbes can use the nitrogen. If it stays relatively chilly through the winter, it's not going to denitrify until the soil temperature gets backed up to about 60 degrees. So I think you're in pretty good shape either way.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Thanks for the call. No one is waiting at the moment, so if you'd like to talk with Diane and Chuck, give us a call. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll free, 800-222-9455. 333-WILL, 800-222-WILL. Tender bulbs, they've got to come out if they're not out already, huh?
That's right. Although I noticed right out front that there are still geraniums and petunias in full flower. So this is a very special year to not have had a frost. I've had a frost in my windy rural area, but
tonight, it's coming tonight. Ed says 23, I think.
Yeah, 23 probably ought to discourage the geraniums, I would think. Even here in town.
But but the tender bulbs like gladiolus probably would be okay if you just don't want to run out tonight with a flashlight. But I would get them quickly.
Yeah, because they can freeze back to the ground and the corms are still okay underneath. I just had a big back-breaking day this past weekend and got all my tender bulbs dug and brought inside. So.
And I would almost think, don't you think rosemary would still take this frost?
Yes.
I wanted to ask you, Chuck.
Yeah, I still have rosemaries out in the cold frame.
I do, too.
And usually I can get by with them till late November when it needs to go below 20 for it to be a real damaging to them. And the cool thing is they set up flower buds like crazy out here in the cool weather. And you bring them in and they just burst into glorious bloom when you bring them in, which is a nice bonus.
I still have two in the ground at the entrance of my vegetable garden. And I won't be digging them tonight, so they better be okay, and then I'll dig them tomorrow.
Hopefully,
if not, I've got one in the house.
Hopefully the soil temperature is high enough that it's going to re-radiate through them, and things that'll take temperatures down into the 20s aren't going to be that.
And if you'd taken those leaves and mulch, I really mulch everything very heavily. I would hope that they would be okay, because I'm not going to be digging them this evening.
No, not tonight. Okay. Let's talk with some more listeners. We go next to a caller in Urbana, line one. Hi.
Hi. Well, I hope you can help and give me some wonderful advice, but I have a beautiful ginkgo tree that's about 2.5 feet in diameter. Huge. Planted in 1939.
Wow.
As a male tree. Well.
I hear a butt coming.
Yeah.
But. I see. And I live about six blocks east of Lincoln Avenue, and I know the university planted a lot of ginkgo trees along there by Japan House and the Vet Med building. And I'm wondering if what has happened, literally, I think at least 25 bushels of smelly, oogie, ginkgo, slippery.
Well spoken.
Oh, and it's still, well, they're beginning to fall quite quickly today, but we have swept and swept and swept, and fortunately my garbage man takes them, but the leaves now, and of course the leaves are all gone, but how do I revert it back to a male tree?
Well, I have to tell you, it probably was never a male tree to begin with. Especially back in 39, they really didn't have much way of saying that.
Well, that's crossed my mind.
It was probably always that way. It was a 50-50% chance, and they were willing to let you risk it. But I would say back then, they couldn't have known.
Yeah, I think the other thing is, with the university planting so many male trees, you've got a really good pollen source where, you know, 20, 30 years ago, you probably didn't have ginkgo pollen all over the place. But now when you plant whole streets of male trees, they're just They're just bursting with pollen.
I'm just wondering if they are male trees, all of them. Or, you know, that's my...
No, now...
You know more about than I do, of course, but...
Along Lincoln, no, they're not all male trees, and I see people out actually gathering them as a food source. In Asian cultures, it is a food source and a highly prized.
Yes, and I have taken bags of them out, and that was in early... Well, middle summer, late summer, and left them by the trees. But I began to think I would be arrested if I took any more bushels of ginkgo nuts and dropped them by those trees, because I've seen people, and I even brought one of the nice Oriental ladies home with me, and I said, if you want to come over to my house, and I brought her home, and I gave her a grocery bag, one of those big plastic bags full of them. But, oh, they were so slippery and smelly. I don't know.
And really,
she took them.
You're doing what you can do, and you need to get them as soon as possible, because the minute it's really all over once they get as ripe as they do. And I empathize with you, because I remember my freshman year riding my bike, and the only bike parking spot on the quad was under a female ginkgo. It was just exciting. I mean, these freshman students, you know, you're driving your bike. It's really, if anyone out there has not experienced a female ginkgo.
I understand. I can't walk. I have to walk out with a broom in front of me on our patio, which is on the north side of the house. But the ginkgo is such a lovely shade tree.
It's beautiful shade tree.
In the summer.
It really is. So
it starts giving birth.
Yes.
Well, that's exactly why they did start propagating from male trees, grafting and budding from the male trees, so that they could guarantee that that wasn't going to happen. But the ones that were planted...
Did it work?
Oh, sure.
Yes, it does work, and they can label those, but...
But the problem is...
It doesn't help older ones.
With a seedling tree, the problem is they can be 25 years or more older before they actually reach reproductive maturity, and at that point... You know, somebody's in love with the tree, and it's and male or female.
Well,
I'm
so in love with this. It is magnificent.
Yeah.
It's as big around as a refrigerator,
the most beautiful fall color and beautiful shape. I love the leaf shape.
Really, no insect or disease problems.
No.
Resistant to city conditions. It's a wonderful tree. It's just
my father used to say, it's tougher than a boiled owl. it's constantly shoveling these. Smelly nuts.
I know they smell like somebody vomited under the tree, and it's not pleasant
they
at all.
Walk out there, they're so slippery.
And I don't know that there's even some things that they try to keep from fruiting. There's like a hormone that they can spray on the tree that knocks off the blossoms, but I don't know that I've ever heard that applied to ginkgos. And usually they're such huge trees that would be impractical to do it anyway.
Because they apply Florel to sweet gums.
2.5 stories is taller than our house and magnificent, and I just can't have it cut down, but I don't have enough leaf garbage bags.
You might inquire of a certified arborist. Look up in the phone book under. It has to be sprayed very, very early.
Right.
Well, so, Jim Appleby.
Well, I mean, actually, someone who's a certified arborist, not an entomologist, but someone who is.
Somebody who actually does tree work.
Who does tree
professionally.
Work. Professionally.
Well, my son majored in forestry, but he's in India right now, and this tree has never done this before. Oh, maybe a few, you know, like a little tin bucket full.
Well, it was an exceptionally good year for fruiting of everything, so
really?
You just are caught in the middle.
Probably had very mild weather during the time the pollen was flying, which extended the time when it was viable and would work, because we seem to have had overall a very mild season, and it's probably perfect pollination conditions.
Oh, it must have been super perfect. I have never seen anything like this. Well,
hang in there.
Okay, I will, but I can't have it cut down. It's so beautiful.
No.
You'll notice we didn't suggest that either.
No, the only one who's even said the words cut down has been you, so we're not in favor of that either.
No, I wouldn't think of it. It's bigger around than our refrigerator. Big around as a card table. That's the best description.
Well, good luck. Take care.
Thank you very much.
Let's talk with another caller, a listener in Champaign, line two. Hi.
Is that me?
That's you.
All right. I have two questions. I've had a vegetable garden for the first year, and I was going to have it plowed, and the refuse, composted, but there's been continual rain, so it's never dry enough to do anything. But from what I just heard on your program, it sounds as though spring is the best time to do all this.
Well, spring is when I normally finally get to it, and the good thing about waiting till spring is that it's dried out, it's broken down to some extent, and if you have, particularly if you have a lawnmower that is not in peak condition, I keep an older lawnmower that I don't mind if I dull the blade a little bit and just chew up all the standing refuse that way. And by spring, it really does chop up very nicely. The thing that you don't want to leave there is anything that you know is a crop that's real disease prone, or if you had anything that had a disease problem. Mm-hmm. You would want to probably get those things out, but everything else that's relatively clean and disease free, just chop it up and that's good.
Uh-huh.
You can do that in the fall. It's just that the plants are a lot tougher, and it's a little harder to get done.
I see. Well, I think I'm going to have to wait probably because we don't ever have enough dry days in a row.
Yeah, the next dry spell may be in March.
All right. Now, the other question is about rhododendron. I have a front of my house, all across the front is rhododendron. And I've had them for at least 30 years, and they are magnificent in bloom. But I'm worried about the vinca that has grown underneath them. And I have, when we got the vegetable garden ready, I realized how dense those vinca roots are. And I'm just wondering if they hinder the absorption of moisture of the rhododendron, because it seems as though, even though there's enough water sometimes, why then suddenly there's yellowing of leaves. And dropping.
Now,
and right now they look perfect, and they're setting their blossoms for the next season.
I would think the main concern, as long as they look relatively, as good as usual, is just to make sure that the soil pH is still acidic.
Mm-hmm. Well, I do fertilize them.
Great.
I only did it once this last year. I usually try to do it every 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm. Well, you may just want to, recommit for next year, but I would think the vinca, it would just grow in and around, and I wouldn't think it would take that much moisture, because I have it underneath a lot of my trees and shrubs in an area, and it doesn't really seem to make any difference. You're going to get some yellow leaves, but I would think that's just natural.
Just natural
progression, right.
Right, because even though the rhododendrons are evergreen, some leaves fall off every year.
Mm-hmm.
I see.
Mm-hmm. It's like pine needles, whatever, right. 3-year-old needles fall off, but we don't notice because there's two years worth of new needles out further that we see that are there.
And, the mm-hmm. pine needles just make the nicest mulch underneath the trees. They are so beautiful. It looks like someone has my trees look freshly mulched because the third year pine needles are dropped down. So.
Right.
Yeah.
And if you had pines, you could.
Well, I don't
needles.
Have any pines.
Okay.
What I do have is oak.
Okay.
They're red oak in the front yard. And that's another thing. I wondered if I should leave I always have left leaves there under the rhododendron.
Great.
I've never blown them away or tried to rake them away. But then I was wondering, does that make too dense a cover so that moisture doesn't get to the roots? I don't know the answer to that.
Well, actually, the vinca might help to give it aeration.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to fall in. They're going to blow in there. It won't mat down right to the ground because you've got the vinca in and around. So it may actually, unless you think it's really, really dense and the water is standing, I would think it would be all right. Because it sounds like you are doing everything right because the rhododendrons are evidence the way they still look so nice.
Well, and oak leaves are less likely to mat down than a lot of other tree species, too, because they are so crisp and brittle.
Mm-hmm. They don't lay flat.
They don't lay flat. Like if you had we don't have a lot of elms anymore, but elm leaves used to get kind of slimy and packed down. But yeah. Oak leaves have enough internal body that they don't seem to do that so much.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome. Let's talk with another listener. Caller in Champaign on line one. Go ahead.
Hi, yes. Normally I don't like to get rid of things myself either, but I have some yucca plants that have taken over an island in my yard, and I'm wondering, I dig them up and they pop back up.
You've just made a root pruning is what you've done, and vinca are great from root cuttings. So whenever you take it out, there's still roots left.
Right. I try and dig the rhizome up.
That's right. And there's you can't get it all usually.
Right.
So then does it come back more prolific than the year before?
Generally, yeah. It's taken over an entire island.
Well, I don't know how you feel about a systemic herbicide. I don't know if you use... But you could, whatever comes up, you could do just a paint of that little area that comes up. Then you wouldn't be spraying it.
Okay.
But that would take care of what is left in the soil. And you can't know what's left until it comes out the next spring or when, you know, within a few weeks of when you've done it in the growing season. But, oh, they're tough. That's why they grow so well in medians of interstates. And I mean, they can take the abuse.
Ah, okay.
But you've just made root cuttings. So now, and poppies will do the same thing.
Mm.
If you dig some up, what you've left in the soil, you have some where you exactly don't want them because you moved the rest of them out of there.
It's almost like propagation because each cut off root makes its own new plant. So instead of having one big plant, you have a whole bunch of little plants.
Okay.
In a donut hole around the big plant.
Right. Well, they've taken over, so I'm trying to get rid of them.
I understand.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Okay, thanks for the call. We have done battle with a particular kind of tree that does this. It's like some type of locust, and its nickname is like Tree of Heaven or something, and it is anything. It has nothing to do with heaven at all.
It just grows anywhere.
And you have to... You have to just keep after it and keep after it and keep after it.
It has a kind of an acrid odor when you're pulling on it.
Yeah,
it
has
a real divided compound leaf.
Long.
Yeah, and terrible thorns.
Thorns.
Oh, that might be black locust.
Yeah, I think it's probably black locust, not Tree of Heaven.
You do have to keep on top. It has a more rounded compound leaf, and yes, you do, because I have the same problem.
Yeah, that root suckers and comes up and thickens.
Bad.
So we've had some neighbors cut down one of those trees, and it has just suckered. I mean, it reaches out, reaches out and
that's where
us.
I do the painting of the cut in, because it really, and it doesn't take very much, but while it's in the growing season, not when it's cool, but I understand. And every seed germinates off of trees that do have flower, and they're beautiful white flowers in the spring.
Yeah.
Oh. Fragrant in moderation.
Yes.
Overpowering and
but
profusion.
The thorns, yes, I have experienced this and am currently still experiencing that.
Yeah, you just have to keep on top of it. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area, if you'd like to talk with Chuck Voigt and Diane Nolan. Anywhere else, call toll-free 800-222-9455. We've got about 5 minutes left in this portion of the program, so we could take some further calls. I want to go back to this leaf business, and I want to ask you, now I know this is something that David Inge has talked with Sandy Mason about before, iris, and if you would just review this with me, I hear it over and over again, but it doesn't sink in somehow. I want to pull back some of the material on that kind of a plant, that particular plant, and do I ever want to cut that down? And when's the best time to do that?
For irises, and that's the poor man's orchid, that's what most people have, it's a top exposed rhizome.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't want to mulch over that, but you can mulch up to it. But the mulching over it will make water, and it really
it
is a problem
mooky,
for
yeah.
Right now, if they're not, most of them are starting to die back and maybe completely, but remove every iris leaf now, late fall. Just remove it, take it out of the garden, don't let it set, because that's where the iris borer lays the eggs, and then they will actually come out and bore into the rhizome, which is not a problem until bacterial soft rot comes in, and then you have a rival to the ginkgo smell, but then now you've got... Really, am I right, Chuck? He's laughing. But it's really a smelly yeah. and then a mushy mess. So you want to remove the source for the iris borer to lay the eggs, and that's on the leaf.
Okay, so cut that off all
cut
the way
off
to the ground? Or
all
you
the
leave
way to the rhizome.
To the rhizome,
yeah.
Okay.
And then you just cart them off and remove. It's prevention is the easiest way to get rid of any of the problem. So cart that off, just mulch right up to the rhizomes. I divide mine every 5 to 7 years, or if I want that color somewhere else,
mm-hmm.
and then I mark the leaf with a Sharpie, or excuse me, double marker. I mark it right there on the leaf so I know to take it out. And the best time to transplant is right after they flower, June, July, the hottest time of the year.
Is there anything in the garden now that would benefit by division and being transplanted, or is it too late?
You can still divide some things. Now, tonight being a frost, you might wait till you get a little Indian summer. But I've actually divided sedums and things that are pretty tough. Black-eyed Susans, I moved around.
Still could do peonies, couldn't you? I
still
mean, peonies like fall. And,
peonies like
and,
fall.
And it doesn't matter if there's nothing above ground at this
in
point.
In fact, you should remove peony foliage because it has, botrytis is a problem in the spring. So peonies could be. It's not
and
too late.
When you cart that kind of material off, what do you do with it?
I actually, either bag it and haul it out, or if people are able to burn, but just don't compost it.
No,
don't leave
right.
it laying around.
And you don't want to send it off with the
and
leaves
you don't want
to the yard
to,
waste.
Exactly. You want to actually
okay.
put it with the other.
You want to put it somewhere.
The
sneak
other.
It in the bottom of the regular garbage. But you didn't hear that here.
No.
We will disavow that.
That's right.
That
the tape will self-destruct.
Well, before we wrap up, we've taken care of all our callers this afternoon. Let's go back and review Organic Gardening Conference coming up
Saturday, November 20th, here in Urbana at the Holiday Inn, exit 183 off of I-74. So it's absolutely no problem to get here from anywhere in the state, really. It's $49 a person, 217-333-7738, and let us know that you're wanting to do that so that we can get you on the lunch count. The other thing is we can take walk-ins that day, but we have to guarantee lunch before that, so we can't give you lunch if you just walk in, but we'd be happy to have you because it looks like there's going to be space.
Okay, and when does this begin? What hour of the morning?
8 o'clock till 9
okay.
is registration, and then we have programs that run through till 3:30, 4 o'clock.
Okay, very good. Sounds like a good time.
It looks like a good lineup, lots of variety, and then people will be so excited about organic gardening that you can hardly sit still.
Okay.
And it's easier. Like... A lot of organic gardening is easier than...
You don't even have to rake,
right? I do not rake. I let the wind move. It like an artistic flow.
That's right. The old Ruth Stout book, How to Have a Great Garden Without an Aching Back. You just keep mulching and planting through it.
Yeah, very good. Okay. Well, thank you very much for joining us this afternoon, and we'll do it again
great.
Down the line.
Thanks, Celeste.
You're very welcome. Diane Noland has been our guest, and Chuck Voigt has been our guest this afternoon. They are both with the Department of Natural Resources and Environmental Sciences at the University of Illinois. And you can join Diane each week, Thursday evening at 7 on our companion station WILL-TV for Illinois Gardener. That show is repeated Saturday morning at 11 o'clock. 10 minutes before 2 o'clock, settlement prices should be in from the Chicago Board of Trade. Here's Todd Gleason.
Thanks very much, Celeste. From the Board of Trade this afternoon, futures finished the day like this after the USDA reports came out showing Well, I don't know whether larger than expected, but the larger than the last set of USDA numbers for both the corn and the beans. In the wheat pit, futures were unchanged today in the nearby contract, that being the December, with a high of 304 and a quarter, a low at 296, a settlement price at 302 and three quarters. Once again, that December wheat contract was unchanged for the day. The March futures down 1, 313, the settlement price, the range 315 and a half on the high to low 308 in the March wheat. May contract a 321 and a half high, low 315 and a half, settlement price there 319 and a half. They were down 0.75 cents. And the July contract 327 and a half high, low at 322. Settlement price at 326, unchanged for the day. September futures in the wheat pit, 333 and a half, the high, the low at 331. Settlement price at 332, and they were up a half cent. From the corn pit, where USDA now predicts farmers in the United States will harvest 11.7, nearly 5 billion bushels this year. I believe that number actually is 7.41 billion bushels, but close enough to 7 3/4. Futures managed to rally today on that news, up 2 3/4 cents at 195 and a half on the settlement price, and they had a high today of 201, a low at 195 and a half, and actually that was the low for the day. The settlement price was up $2. I was a little confused there looking at that 195 and a half, thinking, well, how that could that be higher? That's a new contract low, in fact. But the settlement price in the December corn was at $2 even, and they settled up 2 3/4 for the day. The March futures, 212 and a quarter high, low at 207 and a quarter, settled 211 and a quarter, up 2 cents for the day. And the May futures, 219 and 3/4 the high, the low at 214 and a half, settled 218 and 3/4, up 2 1/2 cents. July contract, 2 1/2 higher as well, 226 the high, the low at 221, settlement price at 225, that July contract up 2 1/2 cents. September corn futures, 232 and a half the high, the low at 228 and a half, settled 232, up 2 1/2 cents. And December futures, 240 and a quarter high, low at 235 and a quarter, and they settled 239 and a half. They were up 2 1/4 for the day. From the output, December futures, 147 the high, the low at 143 and a quarter, settled 146, up 3 cents. And the March contract, to 152 and 3/4 high, low there at 149 and a half, settled 152 and 3/4, up 2 3/4 for the day. From the soy complex now, November beans, 527 and a half the high, the low there 512, settled 523 and a half, up 3 cents for the day. January's up 5 1/4, 525 the settlement price, 529 the high, the low at 512. That November contract expired at noon today, so the January is now your lead option as on Monday as we go through this next week. March futures now, 532 the high, the low at 517, settlement price at 529 and a half, up 3 3/4. In the May futures, a 539 high, low at 524, settlement price 535 and a quarter, they were up 3 cents. In July contract in the bean pit, 545 the high, the low at 526, settled 541 and 3/4, up 2 1/4. August soybeans, 546 and a half the high, the low at 545, and a settlement price there at 545, up 3 1/2 cents. December bean meal, 150.70 the high, the low at 147 even, a settlement price at 149.70, they were off 20, and the January meal, 151.80 the high, the low at 148.80, a settlement price at 150.80, and they were down 60. Now the bean oil, where the strength has been pretty constant over the past several weeks. December bean oil, 21.07 the high, the low at 20.25, settled 20.94, up 45 for the day. And the January oil, 21.17 the high, the low at 20.41, settlement price at 21.04, up 42. Hey, stay with us during the closing market report after at 6 after the next hour. We'll talk not only with Mike Zuzulo, who is our regular Friday analyst, but we'll hear a report that I did this morning with Daryl Good after he took a look at the numbers from USDA. That all coming up at 6 after the hour of 2 o'clock Central Time today during the closing market report. Right now, here with the numbers from the Chicago Mercantile Exchange is Celeste Quinn.
Thank you, Todd. A mostly lower day today for livestock prices. November feeder cattle, the high 108.60, the low 107.90, the settlement 107.92 and a half, that down 50. January 103.55, the high 101.90, the low 102 even, the settlement, that down 130. March 99.05, the high 97.25, the low 97.35, the settlement, that down 180. December live cattle, 85.75 the high, 85.07.5 the low, 85.62.5 the settlement, that finishing up 15. February, 88.45 the high, 87.50 the low, 87.67.5 the settlement, that down 87.5. December lean hog, 75.55 the high, 74.40 the low, 75.47.5 the settlement, that was up $1. February, 74.60 the high, 73.30 the low, finishing at 73.75. down 50. April, 71.05 the high, 69.90 the low, 70.57.5 the settlement, that finishing down 40. 69.85 the high today for May lean hog, 69.15 the low, 69.50 the settlement, that down 35. And February bellies, 101.65 the high, 99.25 the low, 101.40 the settlement, that up 77.5. The Dow is up 55 points at 10,524. The NASDAQ 15 higher at 2077. And the S&P 500 up 8 points at 1181.
The Carl Center for Rural Health and Farm Safety is proud to underwrite agricultural programming on WILL. The center helps residents of rural communities with education and training in farm safety. For more information, call 217-383-4606.
Join us Sunday afternoon for a Prairie Home Companion with Garrison Keillor. Garrison welcomes musical guests, Casey Chambers and the ensemble singers, and sitting in with the Guy's all-star shoe band, John Neiman. Music, laughs, and the news from Lake Wobegon on a Prairie Home Companion, Sunday at 2 p.m. Central Time, here on AM 580.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from the High School of St. Thomas More, a fully accredited college preparatory high school whose mission is to teach and form students in a safe, disciplined environment. Their 2004 theme is Come Witness More. An open house with school tours is Sunday, November 21st from noon to 3. Information at 352-7210.
It's time once again to Ask Dr. Science. So let's ask Dr. Science.
That's me.
Remember, he knows more than you do.
That's right.
Ron J. Pieper from Iowa City writes, Dear Dr. Science, what's the difference between an engineer and a physicist in the world of academia?
Not much. In fact, there's almost no difference between any of the so-called disciplines in higher realms of academia. They all involve creating an image, protecting it from attack, and attacking other people's images while not appearing to do so. This covert world of passive-aggressive manipulation had put the late KGB to shame, so it's no wonder you're in the dark when it comes to understanding what goes on in the hallowed halls. Did you know that ivy emits certain pheromones that cause deep relaxation, even while the subject appears to be awake?
Thank you, Dr. Science. Send your science questions to Ask Dr. Science. Remember, he's not a real doctor.
I have a master's degree
in science.
Produced by Duck's Breath and distributed by PRI, Public Radio International. For information about the new Dr. Science Get Smart Kit, including his new compact disc with screensaver for PCs and an honorary master's degree mouse pad, all for $21.95, call 800-989-DUCK.
Today's broadcast is made possible in part by a grant from Horene's Pianos Plus.